With the summer sizzle starting to fizzle, cooler heads are looking to lock in a wellness routine fit for the fall and beyond. Lucky for you, Ritual's high standards don't drop with the temperature. Fully committed to traceable science and sourcing, Ritual is shaking up the supplement industry with high-quality ingredients and scientifically developed formulas. With them, you know what you're taking, where it comes from, and why it's important. They've got every base covered, from their clinically backed women's 18-plus multivitamin to groundbreaking options like stress relief and sleep melatonin, which both use first-of-its-kind BioSeries technology designed to optimize formula delivery. And right now, for a limited time, get up to 40% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Know Your Foe episode. We are really lucky to be joined by John Ledyard here today to talk about the Steelers. If you didn't listen to the earlier show he did the Bucks preview for us as well. And John, a big-time NFL writer. John, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Excited to be back with you and talk a little Ravens-Steelers scheme. This is a matchup with a lot of history, unlike the last one we did where I feel like Bucks-Ravens almost never happens. This one happens all the time, so there's lots of recent history to draw from and certainly lots of narratives going to this one. Obviously, a lot at stake, so it should be fun.
You grew up in Western Pennsylvania, Steelers fan. What's your first season kind of where your Pittsburgh memories start?
Man, I would have to say probably some of the 98, 99 seasons. I was young then, but it was like the Cordell Stewart teams and trying to figure out if he was a quarterback and if he was good enough, and obviously great defenses, and you know, losing to the Broncos in the playoffs one of those years was one of my first memories. And so, yeah, there's a lot of early memories for sure. Back then I didn't have cable, so I was listening on the radio every single game. We'd listen to on the radio when I was like 8 or 9. My family didn't have cable till I was like probably a teenager, so if they were on Monday Night Football, we might be able to like mess with the antenna and get a game. But I was going off almost all of what my grandma was a diehard fan. She'd call me and let me know the scores. I was like 8 years old and just waiting by the phone Sunday night to find out who won, and getting the paper Monday night when my dad got home from work, the Monday morning paper. And that was how I learned about things at that time. And then we got cable and my whole life changed. So yeah, I've been a Steeler fan from as early as I can remember.
There you go. So probably remember the 01 season and some of the Ravens and Steelers back and forth. It really, for my money, the rivalry kind of started there. It existed before then, but it was kind of one-sided in a lot of ways, in either direction. 2000, it's kind of the Ravens had their way, but in 01 they started what is really a great rivalry with the Steelers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, two teams that where there's been a lot of respect. I mean, it was different with the Bengals for years. I remember when the Bengals were in their best teams with the Carson Palmer and even Andy Dalton years. It was sort of like always like a dirty, there's going to be fights, there's going to be cheap shots, there's going to be all kinds of stuff. And that was fun as a fan to watch. But Baltimore-Pittsburgh, I mean, certainly had like those moments on edge, but there was a lot of respect in terms of the matchup between the two built similarly teams, and you know, often very physical matches between two of the top teams in the conference. And so the matchup has a ton of great history, probably as good a matchup, honestly, in terms of history as any, certainly recent history as any matchup in the NFL, honestly. And so whenever I don't know how the league misses the opportunities to make one of these a primetime game every year. It seems like it should just be an absolute staple, but they didn't this year. And I think here we go with a really high profile matchup, even if it isn't in a nighttime primetime game.
this is a it's a situation I think where neither organization really wants to play in the other team stadium on night games. And one of the reasons is the Ravens have a fantastic record in primetime games under Harbaugh, 21-3, 22-3, whatever it is now. And the Ravens have been really pissed off that the Steelers seem to get the majority of the home games in Pittsburgh that are in prime time. And so they've asked for that not to occur. And I maybe the NFL's at a point where they're just saying, okay, we're not doing either for 1 year. Anyway, they won't be able to keep doing it.
That's pretty interesting. Steelers also a very good primetime night game team. So it will be interesting to see that matchup between, I think, two of the most, if you're just talking about floor raising head coaches, these are probably like two of the most floor raising head coaches you can, and many have, and I think rightfully so, fairly so, question what's the ceiling with either of these guys. But in terms of raising the floor for a culture and an organization, these are two pretty similar head coaches in that way. So I think it makes for a fun matchup, especially in primetime.
We have talked a little bit about this. We're going to forgo some other stuff, but we talked a little bit about the head coaches for the Ravens and Steelers have a lot of similarities, obviously in terms of tenure and other things, but in terms of having a fan base that has a very vocal minority of, I hate this guy, I want him out of here kind of thing. It's incredible to me. I mean, I don't get it in either case. I mean, I know I understand some of the fatigue fans may have with hearing about they have a winning season every year. And there's another group that says, well, they haven't won a playoff game in forever kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, this is the difficult part of evaluating all of this is if you want to say, oh, you know, it's time for these franchises to move on from so-and-so Tomlin or Harbaugh as head coach. I mean, I think there are valid arguments and reasons for like why that might be the case. If the goal is a Super Bowl championship, I think there could be a case for that being true for them. However, you have to accept the reality that you may get something way worse. And you have to be okay with that. And so that risk, you know, from a managing standpoint, I think both of these front offices crave stability and craves consistency. And those are really good traits for any people in leadership to be able to covet, I think. However, they come at a fault at times when not a lot changes. And for Harbaugh's situation, he has mostly hired pretty strong coordinators, and that has really helped him. Whereas Pittsburgh, I think for years, they did draft really well. Tomlin has really struggled to find good offensive coordinators, especially throughout his time in Pittsburgh. And the floor has been high since Ben Roethlisberger, even it was, you know, not in his prime. They've remained like this competitive, non-losing team. You know, I don't even know if that's been the best for them, but they've kind of remained this thorn in everyone's side, but not like you get into the playoffs when the Steelers have been in the last few years, and it's like, this is the worst team in the playoff field. They're not going to win a game. There's like no question. So this year may be a little better than that, but it's still a something that everybody's got their eyes on getting to that point in the season.
Last thing I'll say is that I think a lot of different constituencies have different feelings about this. As a season ticket holder, I crave that consistency. I want a team that is in the playoff hunt every single year. I want the possibility of having playoff games at home. I want them to be always at least on the fringe of the playoff hunt. So I'm not going to games and freezing my ass off in December for no reason at all. And that's so important to me that I never want to punt on a season, even if it would mean getting a top five draft pick. It just holds no interest to me.
Yeah. And the Ravens have obviously made it further in the playoffs more recently than the Steelers have. And so for them, I think it is probably a little less reasonable, whereas they are one of the teams every year. You look at odds, you look at just the talent they have, key positions, you know, they are in the mix. They're going to be in the mix this year, probably. And Pittsburgh's had success against Baltimore and within the AFC North. And that is really kept. If you ask why does Tomlin still have his job, it's because he does well in the division every single year. That's the reality. Like they have lost three games this year to non-teams that will not be in the playoffs. They have, you know, had not the toughest schedule. They've offensively, if you look at any of the advanced numbers, they're down, but they win games within their division and they're in it at the end of the year because they do so well against the division. And as long as that's the case, he'll probably continue to escape a lot of criticism, and understandably so. Those are the most important games of your schedule, and he does a very good job with those games. And so it really, the perspective is a lot of this in Pittsburgh, whereas Baltimore, I mean, recently they've had so much playoff success, and certainly the hire of Monken looks like a good one. And, you know, Mike McDonald's there and he's great and he leaves. And, you know, I just think like there's a good track record of bringing in people around. I don't know why you'd be, you know, even listening to the thoughts of moving on from Harbaugh at the point, given that they've even had some playoff success. And yeah, you can't get past the Chiefs. All right. Like get in line. You know, a lot of teams are in that boat.
Well, there you go. Let's jump into this game a little bit. We'll start with the injury situation. I see the report. It looked like a fairly grim report yesterday for the Steelers. But I think what I'm hearing is pretty much everybody is going to play of significance in this, meaning Pickens and Watt, at least, are likely to play.
Yeah, we'll see about Pickens. I mean, I don't have any insider information. It's just hamstrings are really tricky. I honestly don't think they know. Like, it's just going to see how does it feel this week. They're going to ramp up. That's always how you treat the hamstring, is you ramp it up. How does he do once it ramps up? You know, that'll be the determining factor. They'd love for him to play, obviously. You know, it's one of the most important games. I think one of the reasons he didn't play against Philly, not that he could have played, but I don't think he could have been 100%, and the risk of re-injury is really high. And so that's why you just have to be careful. But obviously you want him to be ready for this game. And so that's a possibility. It seems like Watt's going to try to give it a go. You know, I don't know how unbelievable he's going to be or if he's going to be as effective as he typically is, given the state of where he's at. The Steelers probably have the best edge rusher room in the entire NFL with Herbig and Highsmith both rushing. I mean, you could say they've been as good as Watt in terms of pass rushing, at least this season. They've just been that outstanding in the reps that they've played. So, you know, you lose something in terms of every down defense with TJ Watt. Their record without him is like 1-11. So that's really unimpressive. But it seems like he's going to at least try to go. How effective he'll be, we don't know. And then other names like Deshaun Elliott, Larry Ogunjobi, whether those guys give it a go this week, we'll see. But I mean, those Elliott obviously played excellent the last time I played the Ravens. So We'll see what direction those end in. I certainly optimistic, but you know, you never know for sure until you get there.
Elliott's having an unbelievable year with I think he's got 18 stops and 2 missed tackles, might be 24 and 2, but it's some outrageous relationship between defensive wins and missed tackles, which that's normally like my strikeout to walk ratio for an inside linebacker, but it, for a strong safety, it's a pretty valid number as well. That's just a very high number of stops for that.
Yeah, I mean, he's been really effective with Minkah Fitzpatrick too, because Minkah weaponizes everybody else on the defense, and Minkah doesn't have the numbers or production this year because he's at free safety. The Steelers are, and we'll get to it, I'm sure, one of the heaviest cover one teams in the league, cover one, cover three. If you're talking about just single high defense, the Steelers are always middle of the field close, single high defense. Minkah Fitzpatrick's the deep guy. They disguise as little as any team in the league in terms of coverages. Like, this is where we'll be pre-snap. If you want to avoid Minkah Fitzpatrick, these are the areas in the field you have to go to. Good luck. Get there before our pass rush gets there. That's like their defensive approach. And so Elliott has been able to be like the freelance player. And sometimes that means tough matchups in the slot. That's not always favorable to him. Those are really tough matchups. He is not an unbelievable man coverage guy, but he's made enough plays in coverage as a deep zone player this year. And then he's also made just the run stops and tackling have been the biggest thing, where it's been just a massive improvement from what they had a year ago at that position with Keanu Neal and DeMonte KZ playing a bigger role. And then Minkah Fitzpatrick hurt, and they were going to practice squad caliber guys. So that's been a massive signing for them. He has always been a good, solid football player. There are limitations, but he has always been really good and solid in terms of what, if as long as you don't ask him to do too much. And so that's just continued in Pittsburgh. And when he has given up catches, a lot of it's been contested stuff, just tough. You know, hey, you give up one in that situation, but does not make a lot of mental mistakes and finishes a lot of plays. And so that's been a huge asset to the defense.
All right, let's move on to Russell Wilson. Obviously, it was a little bit of a surprise to people that he replaced Fields when he did during the season. At least I think it was to the Ravens fan base. But they inserted Russell Wilson, and it seems to have worked out.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you get with Wilson is, I mean, you obviously don't get the same level of athleticism, especially at this point in his career. So, you know, his pressure to sack ratio is still pretty high. I think it's like 21%. So you can still get him on the ground if you pressure him. He's done okay getting out of structure and kind of anticipating things a little bit. You know, I think overall what you get, though, more than anything, is you're just getting way better play as a vertical passer. And frankly, this offense has a lot of issues with efficiency. They run the ball a lot on early downs. They're not a very good rushing team. And so all of those things sort of snowball at a certain point in which your quarterback has to be able to make big splash plays down the field for you. And he's done that. That combined with all the turnovers, leading the league in turnovers forced, short fields. You know, the Steelers are, I think, top 5 or so in the NFL in average starting field position. Like, all of those things have aided the offense and have lifted them when they haven't been able to follow really an Arthur Smith philosophy to success as an offense. They haven't been able to run the ball really effectively. And so Russell Wilson's been in some hard situations, and he's made a lot of more plays on third down. The Steelers are, I think, 13th in the NFL in third down conversion rate. That's not good, but it's not terrible either. And they're in third down almost as often as any team in the league. I think they're like technically 8th, but they're like a couple third down attempts behind the number one team, the team that's in the most of these situations. So you know this, Ken. Avoiding third down is the best way to achieve consistent offensive success. If you live there all the time and you're converting 39% of them, you could do the math. You're not going to sustain many drives. So you have to create splash plays down the field to offset that, and they have done that. I think he's got 19 completions of 20-plus air yards or more this season, one of the higher marks in the league. He hasn't even obviously started the whole season. So that has been enough to boost the offense combined with the other factors, and that's been big. Now, you can argue about the sustainability and efficiency of that, but when your turnover-worthy plays are as low as Russ's are, and I think it's the lowest mark of his entire career, 1.1%, and then his big-time throw rate is like 6.1%, which is back to, you know, the Seattle days, heyday, and those kind of things. Like, then you're going to have – right now you can argue whether it's sustainable, but right now it is what is boosting the offense. So if it is sustainable, they'll probably keep puttering along. If it's not, then you might see this group nosedive.
All right. Take us through the current state of the offensive line and any health issues that might exist there.
Yeah. That's been, once they lost James Daniels at right guard early on in the season to an injury, it's been pretty stable. They got Siamalu back early in the season. He would miss the first couple games. For a big stretch now, it's been pretty consistent. Dan Moore and Broderick Jones at the tackle spots, and then it's been Isaac Siamalu and Mason McCormick at the guard spots and Zach Frazier at center. So, yeah, I mean, you've got two rookies starting in your offensive line. A third would have been starting, Troy Faiutanu, their first-round pick, who got hurt in the first game of the year and is out for the season. And so he would be starting a right tackle. Broderick Jones would be coming off the bench. But Broderick Jones starting now has struggled most of the year. It has gotten a little bit better recently. He's still pretty leaky in pass protection. Doesn't play like any other tackle in the league if you watch him. The technique is all over the place. Unbelievable athlete, unbelievable physical traits. What it looks like on a snap-to-snap basis is anybody's guess. I mean, if you just watch him pass set, you're like, this, I've never seen a guy play like this and be a starter in the NFL. He gets better results than you think, considering he's a completely unconventional player, but it still can get ugly. He loses on counter moves all the time because he thinks that the first time you hit the guy is the end of the rep, and really the play continues, my friend. And so he will be a little bit high variance in that way. Dan Moore's been more solid, better this season than last season for sure. Big improvement. I think he's a league average starting tackle. I think that's fair to say probably about him now, whereas last year he needed to be replaced and struggles against the top guys. But I think generally across the board, you're getting about average tackle play from Dan Moore.
Do you see Dan as being a guy that the Steelers aggressively go after? He's a free agent this year, if I recall correctly, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And I don't know that it'll be aggressive. A lot of that probably depends on what they think of Troy Faiutanu's recovery and how fast they think he'll insert back in the lineup. If they see him as a left tackle, which he was in college, obviously, he said he felt more comfortable on the right side. They had him working on the right side. Does Broderick Jones go back to left tackle where he was in college? He's played way more on the right side now in the NFL. All those questions will kind of have to be worked out behind the scenes. I'm not totally sure. I think maybe Dan Moore commands a contract kind of similar to what Walker Little just got. And so we'll see if the Steelers go for that. And they have Najee Harris and Russell Wilson to look at too. And they need to figure something out of that wide receiver spot. They've obviously gone after all the big names. And so I'm sure they'll be in for T. Higgins in the offseason, and they'll be competing for his services if he's even interested in that. And so we'll see what direction things go. But they're okay when it comes to cap space. They can actually clear a lot. I think they're like middle of the cap right or middle of the pack right now, but they can clear a lot more if they need to with a couple subtle moves. So we'll see where they end up with Dan Moore. But those guys at the tackle spots inside is where their strength is. Isaac Siamalu is an interesting player. He can look dominant for stretches, very aware player. But he can also have some just ugly stretches of losses and pass protection that leave you a little bit puzzled. You know, because it doesn't show up. It's not like there's any consistent issue, but he can really, I mean, guys, when they get into his pads, it can look bad for a rep or two. So a little bit of variance there. I still think he's like an above average starter. Zach Frazier has been one of the best centers in the league, I think, as a rookie. Really dominant player on the move, second level stuff. Mason McCormick has been, I mean, he's a day three pick from a small school. It's hard to ask any more of Mason McCormick than he's been. He's been pretty average for an NFL starter, I think. But I don't know how you could have expected more of that. He can do some cool stuff in space. He's held his own, real old school, grinded out, physical type of player. When they do double and climb, he's at his best. When they pull, he's at his best. This is a zone heavy rushing attack. I don't think that really fits the skill sets of a lot of their players very well, but that sort of gives you an overlay of the group. It's a solid group, I think, that's played, generally speaking, considering the injuries. How many of these guys would you have expected to be an above average starter this season if you told me they were starting? Like, most rookie offensive linemen aren't. Frazier has been. I think McCormick's been about average. Jones has been below average. Dan Moore's about average. Siamalu is maybe a little above average, but they don't have anyone. Argue he's there, but the rest of the group is, you know, pretty average to below average type of players. So considering the group, I think it's been okay this season, but it's definitely not like one of the best units in the league.
Yeah, middle of the pack. I mean, they have had some in terms, I don't know where PFF has been rating them, but you know, 14, 15 in terms of how you'd rank them as a unit.
I think so. I mean, there's games in certain matchups where you could see them being better as a run blocking group, especially in the interior. They've played above that at times. And then you watch them against Philly in a group like that up front, and they're just overmatched. And even the first matchup against Cleveland. And so, you know, it really does. There's just a little bit of variance with them being young. And in pass protection, the scheme aids them a lot. But when they're in true drop back, it can be a little bit touch and go with the tackles. The interior is usually okay, but they've had issues with stunts this season, and so that'll come up against Baltimore, I'm sure.
All right. Let's look about the running back room. Last year, all about broken tackles. That group was the team in the NFL for breaking tackles. What's the group look like this year?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, same two guys leading the way, obviously. Jaylen Warren was kind of injured and in and out a little bit at the beginning of the year, and now he's healthy. When he's been given opportunities, he's run great. It's really puzzling to everybody, I think, why Arthur Smith hasn't used him more. I would argue he's the best running back on the team. You know, Najee Harris is obviously a good player. Warren has three down ability. I don't think Harris has. He's got a little more burst. But Harris is one of the hardest players to tackle in all of football. So, you know, that is still a factor in all of this. Warren can be too. Both those guys, their missed tackle rates are still pretty high. Najee Harris, when they have run the football well, which from week 6 to 8, there was a stretch there where people thought it was coming alive, and I cautioned them, this is just Najee Harris not being tackled. Like, he refuses to be tackled. It's not really a scheme advantage that they're gaining over anybody if you watch these plays. And so that is just regressed to the mean some. He's still breaking a lot of tackles, but it's hard to sustain consistent running success despite that. So, you know, I think the Steelers right now are like 28th, 27th in success rate and EPA per rush this season. So despite back's best efforts, it's just been a real challenge to run the ball consistently.
Every time I see Cordarrelle Patterson on the field, he seems to do good things, including missed tackles. Why isn't he a bigger part of the offense?
I think Steelers fans would say, why is he such a big part of the offense?
Okay.
Because he is playing about 10 snaps a game, and the Steelers have two of the best running backs in the entire league. And it's not that Patterson has done anything. I mean, he fumbled against the Browns, and that got people really riled up. There's just so much speed lost. He's just lost so much explosiveness. He himself has been fine. I think it's just he's not Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris, and most teams don't play their third string running back to the degree that the Steelers do. And it's less about Patterson and more about Smith. I mean, you've got the 2-point conversion play against the Browns. He's throwing a fade to Cordarrelle Patterson. Cordarrelle Patterson hasn't even played wide receiver for years, and he wasn't a good wide receiver when he played wide receiver. So you have George Pickens and Mike Williams throwing fades to Patterson. So it's less about Patterson, the individual, and more about why is this player getting usage when our two best players outside of Pickens are probably Harris and Warren. Why aren't we getting them more touches?
Well, that's fair enough. Cordarrelle was a rookie. And this is just how long Cordarrelle's been in the league. It's his 12th season right now. He's a rookie in the Minnesota Baltimore snow game in December of 2013. He scored a touchdown among those five that were scored in the last 2 minutes. So
I'll never forget that game. Insane football game.
Yeah, it was very cool. It's a great game to be at. And you probably, growing up in Pennsylvania, you probably were snowed on or have, you know, some heavy snow during the game. That's the only time in Baltimore we've ever really had a blizzard going on during the game. And, you know, it's like you brush it off your coat and then, you know, you look there like a minute later and literally is a layer on there again. It's just weird.
Yeah.
You know?
My wife tells the story of being at Steelers Bears game if Bettis, the iconic runs over Brian Urlacher at the goal line play that you see in NFL films all the time. She was at that game. It's a snow game. And it was, you know, Steelers like grounded out on the ground against one of the best defenses of all time. Like definitely an all-timer when you get to go to a snow game in person.
Yeah. Everybody should get to do it once. Although I have no interest in going to Buffalo for a snow playoff game this year. I will, but I have no interest in the Ravens having a snow game. All right, let's keep talking about the wide receivers now. Talk a little bit about, take us through the entire core, wide receivers and tight ends.
Yeah, I mean, it's George Pickens. If he plays, obviously not utilized enough, but utilized more is kind of the story there. You know, if you would have, if we would have done the preview when they played, you know, a couple weeks ago, I would have said, you know, they got to get him the ball more. They've tried, certainly, as he's played more since then. I still don't think it's been enough. I still don't think it's been in enough ways. You know, their way of getting him the ball is just airing it out on nine routes. And it just, you know, I think it's fine. He's great in those situations. He should see a lot of those opportunities. They just, this offense just doesn't really scheme people open. It doesn't really get people touches per se. It's just kind of, this is what we do, not necessarily built around players. Pickens has been really good this year, though. I mean, he's made more contested catches recently. He's obviously a great vertical threat. I think probably in tier one in terms of just ball tracking down the field. And Ravens fans probably are somewhat familiar with him.
You know,
everybody will try to get under his skin. He is one of the more mercurial humans probably in all of football. I don't think he is what a lot of people think he is, which is just like this guy that's just always looking to scrap. He just sort of is like easily riled up, and he doesn't back down from anyone. And every opportunity to prove himself is one that he takes really seriously. And so it will be, the mind game part will always be interesting, I'm sure, in this matchup with players that like to talk on both sides.
As the summer sizzle fades, it's time to establish a wellness routine that's here to stay. Ritual is shaking up the supplement industry with their focus on traceable science and high-quality ingredients. They've got every base covered, from their clinically backed women's 18-plus multivitamin to their stress relief and sleep melatonin, both using first-of-its-kind BioSeries technology designed to optimize formula delivery. For a limited time, get up to 40% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But I think overall, he's the number one guy in the offense. And if he doesn't play, then it becomes much more of a collection of people after that.
I mean, one of the things that the Ravens have as a problem in terms of Pickens is being able to cover him, because the matchup at typically at right cornerback, and Pickens is normally on the left side of the X spot, is going to be Brandon Stevens. And right. Brandon Stevens is very sticky, but has to play the high point of the ball, doesn't look back for the ball. And that makes him a big, big risk for back shoulder throws, and also for just throws where the receiver gets his hands up late. And Pickens has proven pretty good at doing that, I thought. I really want the Ravens to put Wiggins directly on Pickens and give help over the top to the degree you need to, but a guy with great makeup speed and a guy who can find the football in the air, I'd just be much more excited about that matchup.
That would be an all-time chirp matchup for sure. Those guys would be absolutely going at it. I think Nate Wiggins is probably one of the more underrated rookies this year. I know he's been beat a few times, but just watch the positive reps and you see the high-end competitiveness and stickiness that he has in coverage. He's played the run way better than anybody would have expected that watched his Clemson tape. He's super physical. He plays with an edge. Like, to me, he profiles as well, even though he hasn't gotten the attention this year as some of the other corners in the rookie class that have gotten attention. So I'd be all about that matchup. He's mostly played on the left side, so that would be good to see him on the other side too. But, I mean, Stevens has played well, like you said, against other players. It's just Pickens has given him a really hard time. You know, Humphrey's another chirper. He obviously will play in the slot a lot when they go that way. The Steelers counter sort of, I mean, they have spread the field a little bit more this year when they want to pass, but they, you know, they also will go heavy personnel. And so, you know, all of these guys' ability to tackle in the secondary, I think, will be tested. But, you know, you've got Calvin Austin as a player that's played a lot better. He is kind of an old school slot. By old school slot, I mean like when the smaller slots were more in vogue, in which it's sort of only true in an old school offense like Arthur Smith's now. A lot of the teams are moving bigger players to the slot. He still plays in there for Pittsburgh. A lot of vertical routes. They try to get him down the field. He's been pretty not an unbelievable all around player, but I think he's played well enough this season to be, you know, a 3-4 for a team, basically. The other spot is where it gets tricky. Van Jefferson's a heavy blocking wide receiver. He's okay at it. In an ideal world, Van Jefferson wouldn't play on offense, but we don't live in an ideal world for Pittsburgh. They haven't gotten that other wide receiver spot secured. They traded for Mike Williams. I think he has like two catches. He's barely been targeted. Sometimes he barely plays. He doesn't get open very often. He is just basically a back shoulder fade route guy. So it's all about not about volume at all with him. It's all about, can you hit the splash play? And he's given him two of those this season, two big ones. And we'll see if he can give him any more. You never kind of know. He's always going to have that contested catch ball skills ability. Everything else is pretty minimal with him. Scotty Miller's, you know, been out there. We'll see if Pickens plays. He probably won't play very much. Ben Skowronek Scotty Miller's kind of a, he can stretch the field. He's actually made some tough catches this year when they have targeted him, but his production's minimal. He doesn't even have 10 catches this year, I don't think. And Ben Skowronek's been the new addition that's kind of interesting. He plays, he's like a tight end slash wide receiver hybrid. He's really can be effective in the run game, but it's also kind of a tell when he's out there. He's not like going to get open necessarily. He doesn't have great receiving skills, sort of like Mac Hollins. If you've scouted or watched him, they're kind of like similar players. Hollins has become more of a true wide receiver X guy than Skowronek become, but both guys are out there, special teams, physicality in the run game, blocking ability. You know, can we run a bubble screen to that side of the field and instead asking George Pickens and Calvin Austin to block and watching both of them get blown up? Can we have Skowronek and Michael Pruitt out there or something like that? But all these things become pretty, oh, that's a tell. Like if those guys are out there, you're probably not worried about them running a real route. So the Steelers just don't really, they're pretty obvious and predictable, I think, as an offense. So they've struggled against good defenses this year pretty heavily. Now they've turned the ball over so much, they forced so many turnovers, I should say, and they've operated with so many short fields. You know, they've hit splash plays down the field that it's offset some of that, but down to down, they don't tend to dictate their will on opponents. And so I think that could factor into this game pretty heavily.
Okay. Tight ends, want to talk about them?
Yeah, I mean, Darnell Washington's probably the most fun player in the entire NFL. Ultra physical, amazing blocker. People have probably all seen him take Darius Slay all the way to the wall in that rep against Philadelphia this past week with the block. He is exactly what people hoped he would be coming out of college, one of the most physically dominant players in all of football, basically like having an extra offensive lineman. They don't weaponize him nearly enough. There is nothing really, there's nothing versatile enough with his skill set. A guy can run a 4.6 40 that's almost 300 pounds. They can move down the field and catch the ball, should be way more utilized and should be a way more versatile piece in their offense, but it's pretty straightforward when he's out there. Pat Freiermuth is having a good year. Their usage of him has started to improve. He really is at his best when he's used as a vertical threat at this position. For the beginning stretch of the season, they just didn't do that. He was running the least, 9% of his routes were verticals. It was the least of his career. It didn't make sense. Then before this past week, there was a lot of vertical routes, and he had his best stretch of the season those three games before this Eagles game. The Eagles game, they barely played on offense. They played 43 snaps, and they had 11 snaps in the second half. I don't think I've ever seen that again. So
no, never seen it.
This is sort of like, you know, we'll see how they use him, but he is a barometer oftentimes for how successful I think they can be offensively. And then Michael Pruitt's just a pure blocker. Arthur Smith loves him, so he might run a screen for him and waste one or two plays a game, but it's not very big part of the offense.
Referring back to the Eagles game, and I want to kind of move on as quickly as possible, but didn't they only have two possessions in the second half, the Steelers?
Oh yeah. So.
I've definitely never heard of that.
A 13 play drive, another 13 play drive, and a 21 play drive for the Eagles.
That'll do it.
Oddest thing I've ever seen in my life.
All right. Let's move over to the defense since we're kind of running short on time here. Talk about maybe the most common looks they use on passing downs. That's usually the place I like to start on this. Yep. So do they still run a committed nickel? Do they have a dime back? How do they line up?
Yeah, they could do all those things. I mean, most of the time there's two linebackers on the field, four down, and then they're playing with five defensive backs. And a lot of the time that is Sutton or Beanie Bishop in the slot. I think they're the heaviest. Tampa Bay, Indy, those teams are up there, but they're in the conversation for the heaviest single high team in the league. So free safety, middle of the field, cover one, cover three is what you're getting almost all the time with them. Very low amount of cover two, almost no cover four, cover six, things like that. They don't disguise many coverages pre-snap, so there's not a lot of post-snap, so there's not a lot of rotation post-snap. Wow. Minka's going to be high, Elliott's going to be down, or they're going to, or Elliott could roam. He could be in the slot. He could do lots of different things depending on what you're looking at him. Obviously against Baltimore, he'll probably be in the box a lot. And he's been really good there. Patrick Queen's been good there as well. I think they have had, he's been their middle linebacker and he's played pretty well this season. Landon Roberts is kind of the early downs other linebacker, and he's very good against the run. Maybe he's their best linebacker against the run. Run like Peyton Wilson does. He gets the most out of his skill set, honestly, even on passing downs, but there is some, you can certainly test him there, I would say. And then the key for everybody is, can, if you get Patrick Queen in space or Peyton Wilson in space, athletically they're excellent, can they finish tackles? You know, Wilson's been okay this season, missed a couple last week. Queen, as you know, has been one of the worst tackling linebackers in the league throughout his entire career. So it's just anybody's guess. If he finishes, he's amazing. If he doesn't, he's terrible. And there's no in between. And sometimes he looks amazing and he's like, why would you ever test this guy in space? Other times it's just miss after miss. And, you know, even though he athletically has the ability to get there, he just doesn't finish enough.
Now, going back to Peyton Wilson, coming out of NC State last year, he had about the best. I talked about the strikeout to walk ratio for inside linebackers, 44 stops and 4 missed tackles, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. I was distraught that the Steelers got him at linebacker. I thought that was going to be a very big move for him. They haven't got him on the field as much as I would have expected this year. I'd expect he'd be eating a Landon Robbins, a Roberts lunch by now.
Yeah, he's playing more than Roberts, I think, but Roberts is still 20-25 snaps a game, short yardage, early downs. I bet against Baltimore, Roberts will play just given their offensive approach. We'll see if Baltimore takes advantage. Not a lot of teams have gone after him. Goal line, like Roberts is going to be in. Like, he's great in all those situations. He's just the fastest to read it, trigger, knock guys back, make tackles for loss. He's also a good blitzer. So all three of them have honestly been good this season. Queen is just really high variance in terms of his ability to finish plays. He's smart. He gets the right place a lot of the time. He's had some amazing games this season. Early in the season, he was really struggling. He's played better against the run as the year's gone on. And then against the pass lately, he's been in okay position. He just hasn't finished a lot of plays the last couple of weeks, which has led to some grading you don't like to see necessarily from him. So he can be a high variance player, as you know. I still think the prototype of him is what you look for at this position. The ceiling of what he and Peyton Wilson could give you is of such a vast improvement over what the Steelers have had at linebacker, but there can be a little bit of variance to their play for sure. The rest of the secondary, I mean, other than Minka just being a free safety, I think Minka's the least targeted player, defensive back in all of football in terms of primary coverage. So, you know, this is part of my gripe is that if you know where he is all the time, how can he ever make plays on the ball? And for a while, he was one of the best players in the league at making a play on the ball. Now he has an interception in like 2 years, and he was hurt a lot last year. But it just, you hardly ever see him during the course of a game because of how they use him. And so I regret that a little bit, but he does keep a lid on things. He doesn't allow splash plays, keeps a lid on things really well. It is a pretty much a disaster around him, like, because the rest of the corners, Joey Porter Jr., I'm sure, I haven't even looked, but he must lead the league in penalties for this position. I mean, he had 5 or 6 in one game. Like, it's just a kind of a mess with him. He has high end ability and once in a while put it together for an amazing game, but lots of penalties, lots of mistakes. Dante Jackson struggled. The tackling can be suspect. It's sort of a mess outside of Minka and Elliott, but Elliott plays down low a lot.
Let's go back to Minka for a second, because the Ravens have had a lot of problems at safety, obviously, this year, and had to basically jettison two of their starters, two of their back end starters. Mm-hmm. Minka, you mentioned playing a lot of single high. He's given up a lot of yards per target this year. And I noticed it's one target every 17.7 coverage snaps, which is very low, but he's given up, it looks like, over 11 yards per target this year at free safety. That is a lot.
Yeah, when he is targeted, which again on the season, I think it's the lowest in the league of like any safety in the NFL. So when he is targeted, it's almost always way down the field. And, you know, you can argue like what's a primary target in terms of coverage responsibility. Sure. Ideally, you're just limiting targets in general because you're in the right place all the time. He does that for the most part. When he gets got, it's going to be obviously because of his deployment, it'll be further down the field. He's trying to cover all the time for just disasters around him. Dante Jackson's at a really hard time in man coverage. He's just small. He gets physical off the ball, top of routes. He loses all the time. Basically anybody with size or strength has just kind of run through him throughout the season. So he's really had his issues. He's got five picks. And if you looked at the box score, you'd say, oh man, like this guy's going to get a nice deal. He's going to be a free agent too. I don't think he's a starting caliber corner in the NFL. And then you combine that with the tackling issues, smaller corner. He's playing through a shoulder right now. We'll see. I mean, he's never been a great tackler throughout his career. So I'm pretty hesitant to say, oh, that's the reason he's not tackling well. He missed a couple against the Ravens, big ones. If you play zone defense and you're a heavy cover three team, and the Steelers, I think, are one of the heaviest in the entire NFL, you have to be able to tackle in the flats. Like, you have to be able to rally the ball and tackle. And he just hasn't this year. So give up a lot of big plays that way. He's also late to flip his hips. He gives up big plays down the field. When he has been targeted, a lot of those plays have gone for misses or have been missed by other teams, or he's grabbed and gotten a penalty, or not gotten called, frankly. So the tape is worse than the actual numbers themselves probably look, but you can see, I mean, out of PFF, I think they 129 corners that have played like three. He is 111th out of 129 or so. So he's graded out pretty poorly for them. And I'd say the tape matches that grading.
The Steelers zone man mix, you happen to know it offhand, and what I'm really getting at is, do you expect a difference this week playing Jackson, wanting to get more eyes on the quarterback, whatnot?
They play man 29% of the time, I believe. I think that's the fifth most in the NFL. High, so they it's not been good. Porter is good at man, but he holds all the time, so the penalties are take him down. He's good at the actual, like, he can stick with people. He athletically, physically, he's good, but he just grabs people all the time for no reason. Jackson can't play man, I don't think. Cam Sutton is, I'm not kidding you, the slowest defensive back in the NFL. I firmly believe that. If Ravens fans want to get excited, watch him against Washington. He should have given up 200 yards in that game. They missed every throw. So on paper, zero targets or zero receptions allowed. I think his PFF grade was like 15 because he just got beat every play. They just couldn't hit any of them. So he has really struggled when he's had to play man coverage. They've used him some as a dime backer in certain games, mostly as a zone heavy approach, nickel, or in more favorable matchups since then. But I just think, I mean, he still struggled when they've asked him to cover. So they just don't have a lot of good solutions in their secondary right now. They tried to bring Sutton back and bring Jackson in, and Porter makes the leap in his second season. And it really hasn't come together like that. Porter's capable of high end things, but the inconsistencies are stark. And then everybody else shouldn't be an NFL starter, in my opinion, in the corner room. So they're just definitely hurting there. And that's a place that other teams have. Philadelphia was one of the primary teams that took a big advantage of that.
Okay. Always good to hear this from a real knowledgeable fan who's indicts their own team in some key areas. Let's go to the defensive line, finish there in terms of who's there across with, including the edges.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best defensive line in the league in terms of talent, especially on passing downs. There's some issues maybe in the run game when it comes to that other defensive tackle spot opposite Cam Hayward. Keanu Benton has played better against the run recently, but he's had his issues this season at times. Doubles really tend to move him. He is a bigger guy, but he does get knocked off the ball. Pad level isn't his best thing. Block recognition can be a little bit slow. He's maybe not a nose tackle, but they need him to play nose tackle because they don't. Monty Adams just came back from injury, but he's more of a backup. And Benton is, even though his pass rush numbers, like, he doesn't have a lot. I think he's one and a half sacks this year or something. He doesn't have a lot of production in that way. If you watch him 1v1 on tape, a guy wins a ton. Unbelievable awareness in the screen game, intercepted a screen against Cleveland the other week. Yeah, he's got I think he and Hayward are number one, number two in the league in batted passes at the line of scrimmage. Hayward's always up there. Benton has learned from the best. He is excellent at getting his hands into passing lanes. Great anticipation as a player. That interception against the Browns came after I wrote about how good he was at anticipating and recognizing screens. He shut down a bunch of them this year. So just a really savvy, heady, smart player, really good 1v1 pass rusher, has a deep bag, but hasn't been able to get home because the average time to throw against the Steelers, I forget what the exact number is. I didn't look at it after Philly game, but what teams are throwing against the Steelers amongst the fastest in the entire NFL. And that makes sense. I mean, you know their pass rush group. So they're heavy protect, get the ball out quick. So the production's not necessarily been there for him, but he's winning and he inspires fear, I think, just in the tape. I think Hayward's been as good as any defensive player in the NFL this season. I think he's been Pittsburgh's best defensive player. Unbelievable pass rusher. The power moves are still unprecedented. I mean, his ability to play with leverage has always been best in the league. His motor is unmatched. He remains a good athlete for his position. He's never going to be the most explosive or bendy guy, but he has really had an unbelievable season as a power rusher, pushing the pocket, condensing things, playing contain, hustling to the edges. He's been dominant as a run defender, dominant as a pass rusher this season. I think he's having a better season than anybody on the team. So he would be 1A to me. I mean, TJ Watt, obviously, as an all-around player, you could argue he's as impactful as any in the NFL. This season as a pass rusher hasn't been quite as good as seasons in the past. I think he's the most chipped player in the entire NFL this season. It's not really close in that regard. So that changes his approach. He won't even try to win a lot of pass rush reps because of the chip help or because they're trying to double him with a tight end. He will kind of hang and track the quarterback or try to jump up and get his hands and bat the ball. Like, all of those things have kind of been his way of adapting. The Steelers never move him around. He's always on the left side. He plays unlike the other top edges in the league who all move around and match up hunt, and Steelers just keep him in one spot. I think Watt kind of prefers that, but I also think he's, you know, he would be more effective if he just developed at another spot and was more comfortable there. So I think they're leaving some meat on the bone, not moving him around and not getting more out of him. But the reality is you don't have to worry about that as much when you have Alex Highsmith and Nick Herbig as the other pass rushers at the edge, because they're legitimately two of the better pass rushers in the league, in my opinion.
So JJ Watt, obviously his brother, made a career out of moving around eventually in terms of he same kind of player, left defensive end, left outside linebacker, whatever you want to call him, but he moved around. He could play inside. He could play standing up to find a gap, all those things. Yeah.
Yeah. And JJ obviously a lot bigger and longer than Watt's. Watt isn't a power rusher, so I understand why they don't move him in there. He is a cornering rusher. He's a high side rusher. Mm-hmm. Herbig is very similar. Herbig is the most explosive rusher on the team. Any given snap, I mean, he's beaten Rashawn Slater and Lane Johnson this year. I mean, those might be the two. I mean, they're going to be, you know, top in the all pro tackles, both those guys out of the top six this year, probably. So he's beating them both clean because he's just that fast off the ball and he can corner, and his hands are really good at the top of the arc. But neither he or Watt are power rushers, really. Highsmith has the deepest bag of all three. He will inside, outside, spin moves, ghost moves. He is the worst athlete of the three, probably, but still a good athlete for sure. And also really good at timing up the snaps as the games goes on. He figures out the cadence and he gets off the ball and you're like, oh my gosh, he's the most explosive guy in the league. Watch every snap. He's not the most explosive, but he can give you a couple of the most explosive reps every game because he knows how to time up the snap. So he's given Ronnie Stanley some issues for sure in the past. They've had some really good battles. Stanley's really good. He's played better, I think, at times the year's gone on. And so that one's going to be a fun one, I think, to watch. On the other side, you know, obviously you have Watt. Rosengarten's played what better as the year's gone on too. And Herbig could play either side, you know, and I think that's part of the beauty of having him. And then Preston Smith's been a good player for them too. They traded for him at the deadline, and he's been a nice number four rusher. And so between all those guys, if Ogunjobi plays, he can give you another pass rusher that's on the field. He gets moved in the run game. Monty Adams is back. He's been a good player, solid player for them when he's been healthy. Dean Lowry played more snaps a couple weeks ago and actually played okay. Like, he's barely played this season. So really deep group, really well-coached group, the best coach group on the entire team, has been that way for years. The Steelers basically need their D-line to save them a couple times every game basically to win. And, you know, these guys have been good enough that oftentimes they do that. But the scheme is simple. It's rush four a lot of the time, get home. They blitz a little bit more as the year's gone on. But rush four, TJ Watt, Cam Hayward, Nick Herbig, Alex Highsmith, save us. That is sort of the defensive approach in a lot of ways.
All right. Outstanding, Johnny. This is a great detail through this. If we can, give us two players, one on each side of the ball, that you think really match up well against the Ravens in particular.
I'll go Highsmith for the Steelers defensively. I think he knows how to play this team, and he's had a lot of success against them in the past. And I think that he can be a really effective player in this matchup specifically. So I'll go with him over there. Hard to pick anybody in the secondary, given how they're playing recently, at least. And then I think offensively for the Steelers, I mean, you know, if Pickens plays, then I would definitely say him. I think he definitely has the track record. I think the matchups are there for him to be able to be effective. But it's I don't know how good it'll be even if he does play. So I would really love for Pat Freiermuth to be the answer to this question because he is just, for 4 years, it's just felt like there's so much there. And they just really haven't focused on him. And when they have, he's been great. But it just hasn't been a big enough part of their attack. So I think if it can be a bigger part of their attack, then he could be the answer to that question. But I'm not sure whether it'll play out that way or not.
Well, of course, you know what's happened to the Ravens, and with Hamilton moving to the back end, he's not the answer for Freiermuth anymore, which is a little frustrating. But it is, we are where we are. John, thanks again so much for coming on. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
Yeah, absolutely. Audibles and Analytics is the Substack that I run, and I put out a lot of content there. It's a subscriber Substack, and so $5 a month or $4.17 a month if you do the yearly, $50 for the year. I think it's a pretty cheap rate considering all that I put out there. If you're a Steelers fan, there's content there. Bucks fan. I do an NFL podcast with Ollie Connolly. We just did our all underrated team based on just watching tape, looking at the analytics and the numbers and things like that. And so, yeah, we did an all underrated team. We're doing our offense on Tuesday, defense on Thursday. And so those shows just came out. And so we have a lot of NFL focused stuff. And then the draft, I started my draft scouting reports, and I do a lot of draft stuff on there as well. I've started to do some YouTube breakdowns as well and post them on there. TJ Watt versus Lane Johnson, I did a video on that should be up when this drops. I've done some videos like that, looked at Baker Mayfield's performance. And so if you're into football, like behind the scenes, like tape and analytics and that kind of stuff, and the why and the how of things and how players play and that kind of the scouting side of things, then I think it'd be of interest to people who are into those sorts of things.
All right. Outstanding, John. Highly recommend a Twitter follow also.
Yeah. Yeah. At Ledyard, LEDYARD NFL draft on Twitter.
All right. Highly recommend him as a follow. All the folks out there, thanks for listening. As always, please consider a five-star, 50-word review. Be great if you could give us 50 stars, but five is probably the most you can do. Otherwise, pass the information along this show to a friend. Always looking for that word-of-mouth traffic. Thanks for listening again. John, thanks for coming on.
Well, again, thanks so much for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
With the summer sizzle starting to fizzle, cooler heads are looking to lock in a wellness routine fit for the fall and beyond. Lucky for you, Ritual's high standards don't drop with the temperature. Fully committed to traceable science and sourcing, Ritual is shaking up the supplement industry with high-quality ingredients and scientifically developed formulas. With them, you know what you're taking, where it comes from, and why it's important. They've got every base covered, from their clinically backed women's 18-plus multivitamin to groundbreaking options like stress relief and sleep melatonin, which both use first-of-its-kind BioSeries technology designed to optimize formula delivery. And right now, for a limited time, get up to 40% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.